This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. 11% of Bay Area residents live with a disability. That includes developmental disabilities like autism, cerebral palsy, and Down syndrome. Society makes accommodations for people with these conditions when they're young and in school, like mandated special needs education. But once they've aged out, life can become even more challenging. And in the U.S., history has not been kind. It was just 40 years ago that the Rehabilitation Act passed. It prohibited federal discrimination against, quote, handicapped individuals. In 1980, the U.S. made it illegal to hold people in institutions against their will. It wasn't until 1990, though, that the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law, requiring accessibility for everybody. But there are still big challenges. The maximum government allowance for somebody with a disability is only about $700 a month. That's not enough to afford independence, especially here in the Bay Area. But there's a place in Oakland that provides not only a sense of independence, but also of community. It's called Creative Growth, and it's the oldest and largest art center for people with disabilities in the world. Tom DiMaria is the director. He joined KLW's Ben Trefney in studio to talk about what it's like to be an adult with a developmental disability.
When people have different developmental disabilities and know that there are a lot of aspects of the world that are really not designed for them, it can be very difficult and I'm sure very frustrating a lot of the time. How have you found over the years different people see how they fit into the world? I mean, I'm sure it's an individual case-by-case thing, but are there any overarching perspectives that fit that? Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. And a couple of things. If you deal with someone maybe with a developmental disability who's becoming an artist and expressing themselves, what I see and observe often is how that communication link has been silenced in that person for so many years. And I think about having your whole life story or not having language, and you have to sit with it for 30 or 40 or 50 years before you can finally speak. So that's one way that door opens and you essentially become accommodated by the world wanting to know who you are. And then, of course, physical barriers and all those things have changed. There's also social attitudes that are still very strong. It Creative Growth, the artists work together in a community and they all support each other. And there's a great sense of privilege and freedom for them there and support and achievement. And I watch some of our artists who present that way at Creative Growth. They leave the building at the end of the day and they walk out on the street and the hoodies come up and the shoulders come up and they turn away because they know what they're going to be called on the way to the bus stop, or people are going to cross the street when they see, you know. So we still have a long way to go in terms of that stigma. So it's easier to take the curb away so the wheelchair can go down and the attitudes hopefully will start to change with that.
Have you seen attitudes changing over the years? Has there been an evolution of thought when it comes to disability?
Absolutely. The attitudes have changed. And part of that is to understand that people with disabilities are individuals and they're not other or different or alien from us. And I don't think you automatically institutionalize people who are you see as human beings. So the more that we interact, the more those barriers go down. I think in any kind of social change movement, you have to become radical and move to the extreme in terms of no barrier, fighting every fight. And then over time, you kind of come back to the center where it's a more integrated experience where we naturally have people with disabilities in our lives, in our circle. And I don't think we're that integrated yet, but I think we've opened the doors and it's starting to change that way.
What are some examples of points or events that have helped lead to that integration or lead to that opening of thought? And when it comes to people with disabilities or who come at the world differently or are part of the world differently from, say, your typical person?
Right. Well, a lot of that's been done in Berkeley. People like Ed Roberts, who really led the fight for accessible and accessible world. And if the structures aren't there, you know, it's kind of the hardware is there, if you don't have the hardware, you can't use the software. So those were first things. But a lot of it really comes out of the Bay Area in the 70s, at a time when the women's movement, the gay rights movement, and social change was happening. We were questioning everything about who is a part of the fabric of society. And every time a group advances themselves and pushes, you know, a more inclusive movement that way, brings everybody up. So there are still folks that are, you know, lower on the ladder, but there's been significant social shifts. But the legislation to deinstitutionalize people in California, which came from a single legislator who had a son with a developmental disability, makes a difference. And the fact that you can now get in your wheelchair and get on BART starts to make a difference, because, oh, that maybe you can have a job, or maybe you don't have to have someone push you, things like that. So those things help.
What is the vibe on a given day when you have it abuzz with artists?
It's phenomenal. I remember the first time I came to Creative Growth, you walk into this very large 1,200 square foot art making studio that used to be a auto garage and repair studio. And there's 100 artists all working next to each other. And sometimes it's silent and you feel this energy kind of just coming at you of creativity and people being so focused and intent. So what you'd see are sort of groups of tables and people working in areas according to media. So there are people painting and drawing, people working in fabric and tapestry, you know, getting their hands into clay, working in the wood shop. And so it's a big community. And, you know, an art professor visited recently and he said, you know, I work in a environment in an art school where somebody puts a line on a piece of paper and we have to talk about it for 6 months. And he said, here people don't stop working ever and it's quiet and no one needs to talk about it. So I think that's kind of the experience you'd have. It's extremely process-based. And, you know, when you ask people to speak to you and to communicate about who they are, they do. And if you haven't been asked that for 20 or 30 or 40 years, you have a lot to say, you know. So I like to say, as a result of the process, our artists are very engaged in the process of making art. This product gets created, and then it becomes Creative Growth's job to represent the artist's product and to have their art be seen in respectable contemporary contexts. And that's with the artist's permission, and the artist benefits from that. And that's also a portal to the outside in terms of how it breaks down barriers around disability and brings in, you know, come to our openings. They're phenomenal. It's really mixed. And, you know, that's what I want it to be, where everyone's in it together and all having a sort of shared experience.
Do you guys provide counseling for people as well as the artistic experience? I imagine you have teachers who are helping guide people from an artistic perspective, but then, as you call it, the outside, once you get outside of Creative Growth's art studios, and, you know, you say the hoodie comes up and, you know, it becomes a much more lonely world. How do you work with people then to help them to bring that wonderful experience they're getting from within the studios to outside?
Creative Growth has a phenomenal staff of artists. So we're not trained as therapists or art therapists. So what we do, but I say something very therapeutic happens through art making, because the people are so engaged in what they're doing. And it's amazing how you ask people not to, I don't mean behave like the people are misbehaved, but you say, act this way. You're professional. You're a leader in society. You're aesthetically evolved. You know, show me. They act, they play the part, you know. And, you know, we have family members who come. You know, we had an artist start our program a year or so ago, and 6 months in, he had work in the gallery, which was kind of quick, and he sells it. So we send the check home with him, and his father comes in the next day and says, there must be a mistake. My son cannot have earned this, you know? So there's the fight within, or the breaking down the barriers, the stigma about, you know, how people grow what they can do. So if you become dependent on others, you become a dependent person. If you learn to go to people when you need them, you become more independent.
I feel like in going around in our daily lives in the Bay Area, I think many of us, and I can speak for myself, don't come across people with developmental disabilities all that much. I'm wondering in part why that is, first of all.
Mm-hmm. part of the reason you don't see a lot of people with developmental disabilities out, first of all, not all developmental disabilities are visible. So you can be sitting next to somebody on the bus with a developmental disability going to work and you might not know it. And then there are some that are more visible. There's typically people with Down syndrome are visually apparent to us. So sometimes someone with a brain injury would. But there are certain issues around traveling independently and that kind of stuff that limits sometimes the way that people interact with society. But there's also a sense of there are concerns around safety and community. So people often, stay a little bit closer to home. People with developmental disabilities in the Bay Area often live together in group homes. So their social life is structured through that. And there's often day programming or jobs. So there's just, there's still fewer options. So that's why it's a little bit less.
But for you, with your work, you're surrounded by people who...
That's right. When I'm not around people with disabilities, it seems very odd to me.
I can imagine.
I know. It's like, and actually it's not as much fun.
How's that? Tell me about that.
Well, the creative growth artists are so phenomenally honest and direct and committed and thankful and egoless. Going to art school or having taught art in a, academic context, it's, the ego investment in an artist can be huge, and we just don't have that at Creative Growth. And people, I think when if you have nothing, to lose, you take chances and you're appreciative of what you get. And part of that is just this authentic response to the work and human nature. And also the mannerisms are different, folks on the autistic spectrum who will say, "Oh, I remember your second day at work here in 1991 when you wore the red shirt." I access information and history differently with folks like that. And it's a more interesting conversation because I'm learning about how somebody's brain works and I'm not, having to hear about their stock options or how they were stuck in traffic. And it's just a more interesting human experience for me.